If you like to eat, drink, and be merry, you're in the right place. Faith here with a welcome toast. It was Irma Bombeck who said, "If life is a bowl of cherries, what am I doing in the pits?" Please feel free to consume this show podcast in small bites or eat the whole thing. It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, the place to have a good time. We have a special salad from Carol Peck of Good News Cafe, her peach tomato corn salad. Those three things are unbelievable together. We're going to tell you how to do that the Carol Peck way. And we're going to be talking about all the summer stuff. We've got an amazing cocktail from Anthony DeSario. We have got a fabulous Chardonnay. This is a white Burgundy from France that is available now in our region. Can't wait to get to these. It's really a delicious, delicious wine. My treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributors Chris Prosperi, Alex Province, and our bartender Anthony DeSario, who's our chief cocktail contributor, plus our special guest, Carol Peck of Good News Cafe in Woodbury, Connecticut. Hey, everybody.
Hey. Hi.
Oh, it's the time of year we love.
We've got
so many things coming your
summer
way.
Sun.
You know what I want to start with is I can't get over Carol Peck's combination of this has never occurred to me, and what a combination this is: peach tomato corn salad. Carol,
well, thank you. It's nice to be here today. How I came up with this is, you know, tomatoes are in season, peaches are in season, corn is in season. So as Chris told me a little while ago, he said, if it's in season, it goes together.
You both feel...
You put it a different way, though.
If it grows together, it goes together.
So you both feel that way as chefs? Mm-hmm.
That
turns out to be true.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Especially if they grow in the same area together. Yeah. That's usually almost 100%.
It works with wine as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And up in Washington, I have an amazing farm that has peaches that are just fabulous.
Really? What
Washington,
is that?
Connecticut.
What's the farm?
It's Starberry Fruit Farm. You can go and pick two there. And it's amazing. They have white peaches.
And that
with a great tomato that's coming in. Ooh. And then you can take your corn, you can grill your corn first and then take it off the cob.
Walk us through how to do this. How do we do it?
All right. So you're going to take your peaches, and if you have great ripe peaches, you peel the skin off without any difficulty. The skin just will come off.
Okay.
Okay, so you've got to have ripe peaches if you want to peel your peaches.
And you want
them
skinned.
You don't have to.
Oh, okay.
But I like it better that way, you know.
More refined.
I'm a chef. Mm-hmm. What can we do? And then wonderful tomatoes. You know, you take your tomato and wedge them. You wedge your peaches. Mm-hmm. Okay? You arrange that on a platter. You can grill your corn and then take your corn and cut it off the cob. Or if you don't like it that way, you can cut it off the cob first and blanch it.
Okay.
Okay? Sprinkle that all over your peach and corn platter. And then take either... really thinly sliced red onion or shallot. Put that over the whole thing. Mm. Sprinkle a little salt, I'm not a pepper person, so I don't put pepper on things like that. But a lot of people would. And a little lemon juice, fresh squeezed lemon juice, and then honey over the whole thing.
Oh. Fresh honey.
Yeah.
You mean
nice drizzle of honey.
And do you toss it then?
No, then I leave it on a platter and you just
scoop
it up and eat it.
Oh, my.
That's summer eating.
That's summer right there.
It's so simple. I mean, you know, and you have some kind of grilled fish or whatever with it. It's delicious.
You are so south of France.
A little sliced red onion on top.
I am. I'm there.
Right? Sliced bread, thinly sliced red onion on.
Oh, it's delicious.
If you had some sort of bread, I don't know if a baguette would work or brioche or something to like sort of sop up some of the juices.
I would do more baguette or a sourdough or something
like that.
And you could grill the bread, you know, do big thick cut pieces and grill the
with
bread.
With a little olive oil.
Yeah, and you could have that
rustic
with it. Yeah, it would be really nice together. You know, but it's a nice base. You can start with this. It's like, what kind of herb do you want to put on there? Do you,
what could go on there?
Mint, basil, chervil. Even if you want to take it in another direction, cilantro will work. Mm-hmm.
chives.
So I do like. I mean, people are divided on cilantro.
Yeah,
but I
totally
to be,
divided.
I'm totally into it. But in any case, that is such a wonderful idea as a different kind of salad from the traditional green salad. It's just in a different way to use corn to combine it with peaches. And tomatoes, just fantastic.
Well, they all work together. You're going to see when you eat this. You're going to say, yay, I'm fairly happy.
I wonder if it would go with biscuits, like freshly made
biscuits.
Oh,
yeah, biscuits would
with
work.
The honey.
Playing off the honey and the corn.
Mm. Yeah, biscuits would work
I bet
for
that
sure.
Smoke from the grilled corn with the peaches.
Yeah, it's really good.
Nice.
Wow, Carol, thank you so much for that idea. Oh, my goodness.
Summer food.
Clever.
Yeah, home and make it tonight.
And what interests me is when I was in Paris a long time ago, I'd led a food and wine trip there, and we went to a restaurant called Arpège, which is in Paris.
All vegetarian, yeah.
It became vegetarian. Yeah. At the time, he was serving meat, and he is the one who made the stuffed tomato as dessert. Mm-hmm. That famous thing, and it had 40 herbs and spices or something. You know, I mean, it was just chock full of everything imaginable. And it made me really understand that tomato was a fruit.
Yes.
And not a vegetable.
Exactly.
So I'm looking at your combination here, and I'm thinking, two fruits.
Right.
Tomato and peach, and then the corn in there, which is, it's a corny
sweet,
you know, it
well.
Has its own flavor, and yet it has a kind of neutrality about it that could.
Well,
kind
that's
of,
it. You know, it acts almost like a little fruit. I mean, a vegetable
starchy.
Crouton.
Yeah,
in there. You know, so
that's a great way to put that.
So. And our corn is so sweet here in Connecticut.
Oh, when
in season,
in season it's fabulous. Yeah. It's really
you know,
fabulous.
I have to say, East End of Long Island,
oh,
the same
yeah.
fantastic corn.
Yeah.
I'd say the whole Northeast, right?
Has
pretty much.
Good corn.
You guys can grow so much out there in the Hamptons, right? On the East End.
So, oh boy. Okay, that was really fun.
Wow.
Just wanted to, you know, I'm thinking.
I want to try that right now. I can't stop thinking about the juice from the peaches.
I am too.
Yeah, no, everything. It just works so well.
Can I make a mention of something? When Alex said biscuits, I want to later talk about this because I was just online reading at a blogger site that he claims to have invented the easiest and really fastest, simplest biscuit. What he's doing, and Chris and Carol, I want to know what you think about this. He's using a self-rising flour that already has the stuff in it that you would normally put in a biscuit. So that's all by itself. And he's using cream instead of butter because the cream has butterfat in it.
Right.
Okay. Especially a high fat.
And so he's
butter,
making these instant cream biscuits that we're going to talk about later on the show that are sound amazing to me in how speedy and simple they are. Very wet dough, ice cream scoop, bang, you're done.
The less you work it, the better, right?
That's it. You want it to be crumbly and delicious.
Does that make sense to the two of you, that flour and cream, and making a cream biscuit,
It makes sense for me because I do like a corn cake, which is like a tamale
I
kind
love
of
your
batter.
Corn cake.
Yeah, so, it's a different one. In the summertime, we make like a fresh corn cake that we bake.
Oh.
And we make it with cream in it. That's what we do. And it works really well. Yeah. You know, you grind the corn up. And you add a little flour, cornmeal, and then cream,
totally
and you
works.
Bake it. So I could see this biscuit working because you've got baking powder in there and the self-rising flour.
We were talking about the East End of Long Island, and in East Hampton there is a store called Mary's Marvelous and in Amagansett, too. And it's just a terrific place. And she makes arepas. How do I explain what these are? They're corn and cheese kind of cake, right?
Yeah, it's a Venezuelan. It comes out of Venezuela, arepa. And it is really just like their corn cake, which is a sort of more dense.
But it has cheese in it.
And you
that
could
makes
put,
it a little more dense.
You could put it in, anything in it. They like to even eat in plain and put, you know, with eggs and all kinds of stuff. I have a Venezuelan guy who works for me, and he goes nuts for arepas.
I really
his partner makes.
Yeah, we don't. You know what? We don't see that on the menus around here.
He's an incredible waiter, that guy. So we were when I had these arepas, I was so crazy for them that I started going into Spanish markets to think how I could make them at home. I still can't really find the right flour, I've decided, but in any case, if you see these somewhere, I would say absolutely try one.
Yeah.
Just
definitely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, arepas can be addictive for sure.
Yeah, and you want to be careful.
I wonder why we don't see them a lot in here. Maybe because we don't have the people from, right?
I bet we could find them in Hartford.
Yeah, maybe.
Trying to think if I've seen them in
Hartford. But it's really very Venezuelan, South American, that kind of thing. And you don't have – it's not even in other countries.
Yeah.
You don't see it in Chile or anywhere else.
It's very specific to that.
Exactly. So – you have to have people who really cook Venezuelan food.
So
the Colombians make them too. Make them as well.
I had some Colombia beans that used to do that.
Yeah, Colombia, they make them as well.
So it's really that area of South America.
That's it.
Wonderful to hear about all these things, and I'm suddenly my mouth is watering. So, so while I was saying that, I asked to get the paper on the biscuits, and so I just want to say, because you've heard about Carol's peach tomato corn salad, do you do that in the restaurant? By the way,
I can. It depends
if you special, people call up.
No, but also specials, that kind of thing. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're encouraging you to do this at home. This is going to be our next go-to thing. So I've got the paper on the biscuits. And this was originally, I want to give them full credit, in Serious Eats. And so the guy talking says, the way you want to streamline a biscuit is to replace the flour that's normally in there that is combined with baking powder and salt. And you replace all that with the self-rising flour because that has all of that in it. And it's softer, the self-rising flour, and it's, you know, more finely milled. Mm. And so it's very, very good for making biscuits. Mm. So these cream biscuits replace the butter, as I mentioned, and milk with heavy cream. So you're not adding butter, you're not adding milk, you just put in heavy cream. Because there's butter fat in the cream, the biscuits, when you bake them, you brush the top with the cream, and so the whole biscuit the way down has this very buttery flavor. And so here is, these are two ingredient biscuits, and I think that is such a riot. Okay, so self-rising flour, and then an equal amount of heavy cream. And you do it by weight. You want to weigh it.
It is a wet.
It's a very, very wet. And you just stir it together, and you're done. You have a biscuit dough.
Wow.
That sounds right for me.
Yeah, see, that's my kind of cooking. Right.
You know what seems interesting
that genius?
Is the flour is homogenous, so you don't have to worry about getting like the salt and everything sort of mixed in. And then you don't have to worry about the cold butter being cut in, so it's equally dispersed because it's already in the liquid homogenized cream. So pretty genius.
Yep. Well, fast, too. And
you know, and so I was thinking to myself, when you give me a recipe like this, and I'm not a baker, I think to myself, what do you mean? How much flour? You know, how much cream? And he said what he thinks about is 1 ounce is one biscuit of flour. So if you're going
to
make 12 biscuits, 12 ounces, and then you do the matching liquid, 12 ounces of heavy cream, you're done. And it's quite wet, and then you take an ice cream scoop it out, and then brush them with cream, you know, keep them a couple inches apart on your sheet, and then into the oven they go at 425, 425 for 10 minutes.
And they'll look like a regular biscuit?
They look totally like a regular biscuit.
I would chop up some jalapenos in there, right?
Or corn. Add some corn. Chop,
if you like
the recipe. Bacon.
Bacon.
I'm just going to leave these.
What's that Mexican cheese that you put on the...
queso fresco.
That would be fun to sort of put that in with the cream as well.
So what fruit are we into? We've done Carol's peaches. Is anybody doing anything else with any fruit right now? Are you doing blueberries? Yes.
It's sangria.
I haven't had any of his gazpacho this year yet, and I'm jonesing.
Okay, I'll bring some
in. We're going to do.
You make tomato one?
Oh, my God.
Do you chop it?
No, blender.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's not gazpacho for me. I'm sorry.
I know, but you know what?
Hey, this is the real thing.
Oh, wait. I was the same way.
Yeah.
So Alex, we're going to do a special thing on this, and we're going to post the recipe as we always do.
Okay.
Coming up, but I just want to say one thing to you, Carol. Honestly, his family's from Spain.
Okay.
This is the best gazpacho I've ever had in my life.
Do you make a white one as well?
We made a winter one, but we'll I can't spill the beans.
I challenged him and I said, can you use canned tomatoes in the winter and make gazpacho? And we did.
Yeah, and it wasn't
bad. It was really good.
Yeah, but the summer one, I'm telling you, I used to be that guy. I chopped only. It was the way I did gazpacho from the beginning. And then I had it and I was like, no way.
So I watch my grandfather and my great uncle, you know, we go to the finca and they would make it out of this bowl that has been the family for, you know, hundreds of years. They do it all by hand.
Mashing
so it's
it.
Using, yes, you know, mashing it in a wooden bowl.
Yeah, we have,
and everything
we have,
gets chopped.
We have blenders now.
So we, yeah, as Chris points out. So it's that concept that's been turned in. So sort of what the moms, you know, or dads are doing, how they learn from their grandparents, but modernize. And I still am able to capture that sort of the
get
spirit
that right
of,
flavor.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You can, you can drink the whole beaker.
Yeah, I adore gazpacho.
Yeah, you can go to our site right now. We're going to post the recipe in a special way, but you can go to our site right now and find, you know, just in the search box.
Yeah, because we did it.
Put in, you know, gazpacho, and you will see Alex's gazpacho recipe there.
It
is stunning, stunning thing. And that's at foodschmooze.org. Okay, what are we doing? We're talking summer food. We're having a great time together. We have a cocktail and a great wine coming your way. Carol Peck with more ideas. She is an amazing, amazing restaurant chef from Good News Cafe in Woodbury, Connecticut. And we are going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more Food Schmooze. Don't go away. Just want to hang out with you. Okay, hope that first bite of the Food Schmooze felt like a hot biscuit with butter coming your way. Feel free to tell your food-loving friends worldwide they can enjoy the show and our online site at foodschmooze.org. Here's your second bite.
Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
We have a free podcast for you, meaning you'll never miss a drop of pleasure. And here's how that works. You just sign up for it once at our site, foodschmooze.org, and then we automatically send you this show every week. It just pops up like a hot biscuit, and you can listen on your schedule when you want, when time permits. It's just a terrific thing. It's how so many people are listening. And when you're at our site, you will see that we have our curated food, wine, and events and cocktail recommendations there. So stop by and say hello and discover all kinds of things. The richness of life. Foodschmooze.org. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Provence, and our cocktail chief contributor, Anthony DeSario, our special guest, Carol Peck, who is chef and co-owner of Good News Cafe in Woodbury, Connecticut. I want to talk with you in just a bit, Carol, about some really fun things to do with zucchini and grilling vegetables in general. But first, let's turn to, I said to Alex Provence, Alex, pick for me. He's a wine broker, and I said, pick for me one of your absolute favorite summer white wines. And he has come up with one that is so beautiful. It's a white Burgundy, and it is made by the Auvergne of family. So the vineyard is Auvergne, and we have this online, so you can either bring it on your phone to the wine store or call ahead and spell things for them. White Burgundy means that it's Chardonnay.
Yeah.
So tell me about this.
So it comes from the south side of Burgundy, so just north of Beaujolais and just south of Côte d'Or. And because it's white Burgundy, it's 100% Chardonnay. So this is fermented in stainless steel, and it goes straight into bottle, so it doesn't have any barrel aging or barrel sort of contributions, no oakiness. But what's beautiful about that is all you're tasting is beautiful fruit grown on limestone, and that's fermented and put into bottle, so you're really tasting the fruit. You're not tasting fruit that's been masked by a big oaky barrel. And it grows on the specific sort of limestone soil that they're famous for that has a minerality to it, but it's also citrusy and has good acidity. So it's like fruit and sort of, you know, salty.
So it's crisp yet balanced,
it's, it's kind of a beautiful mouthfeel and a wine that yet has a body to it, a richness to it. And it is the kind of white that is just beautiful sipping. Or pairs well with foods like this. I would say fish that have a kind of buttery feel to them.
Pan-fried flounder and brown butter sauce or...
lobster.
Scallops.
You know,
something.
So whatever you're, you know, doing something on the grill, but also just for sitting around and drinking this wine. Absolutely delicious. A beautiful wine to bring to somebody's house. If you have to walk in the door and you want to not seem stingy and also feel proud, this is one of those wines. So this is called Mâcon Village, and it is from the Ovig family vineyard. And we have this online, and it's for retails for about
$18.
Yeah.
So that's great.
It's really good price point for a wine like this.
If you're used to drinking American Chardonnay, you know it's a bigger style. This is a little more elegant and nice acidity. So for the summer, it's hot. You don't maybe necessarily want a huge Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. This is a beautiful chilled, you know, with grilled
definitely more refined.
Sit outside.
Nice wine.
They're doing a lot of that in France and stainless steel and all the whites and rosés and instead of in barrels.
The trend is going towards un-oaked Chardonnay.
Right, because it's crisp and it's
really
delicious.
Refreshing and not as flabby, but still has good mouthfeel.
And let's face it, they can reuse the barrels again and again and again and aren't having to hire people to retoast the barrels.
They also get rid of the barrels after so many years, too. They don't keep the barrels.
And they're expensive.
It's a huge cost, for sure.
Oh, yeah, they're about $1,000 a piece, a barrel.
I like the crispness of a stainless steel fermented better than a, especially in Chardonnay, than an oak. Mm-hmm.
I like them both. Yeah. I like a Merlot.
I don't turn away either.
For
summer, it's great. It's nice for summer.
But it's $18. You know, if it was an oak Merlot, it would be $45 or something.
Exactly. So online, we have a shot of the label. We tell you what to say at your wine store. The distributor is Winebow. Perfect host gift wine and just the two of you for the weekend, delicious drinking. So Mâcon, Mâcon, Village, Villages, and it's the Ovig family. So there you go, a French wine for the summer and sold widely here now thanks to these importers and distributors. So that's a great, great wine choice, Alex.
Good.
Thank you for that discovery. We're going to move on to cocktails in just a bit, Anthony. I want to take a quick pause to talk about grilling vegetables for a second, if I could. One of the things that we've discussed on the show is seeing that vegetables get coated with oil and then they burn on people's grills. And so we're not talking about a nice little char or that beautiful dark brown caramelization. We're talking about out-and-out black vegetable.
It looks like the scarver you clean the grate with.
No, an oily burn, right? Oily burn that I can't
stand. I would like to be the first to raise my hand and say that I have been the person
that
who's burned the vegetables more times than I would care to tell you because it just gets away from me sometimes. What's the trick to not having that happen?
And I both agree that you got to cut your vegetables bigger.
Yeah.
You can't have these little pieces of vegetable on a grill and try to turn them.
Yeah, I've seen people try to grill vegetables that you would normally saute. Yeah.
Right. And they fall through the grates.
Yes. So tell us, what do you mean?
For example, if you take a pepper, you're going to want to cut that pepper either in a big, wide, rectangular or in a triangle. But a large piece, you know, like basically something that would be, 4 inches by 4 inches or something?
As big as you can get it.
Yeah.
Wow.
You
okay.
Yeah, and if you want it and smaller, cut it after you grill it, like you said with the corn, right? You don't try to grill corn after you take it off the cob. <That's> You grill it before you take it off the cob, and then you cut it.
Oh, that's what I'm doing wrong.
But corn is another thing, too, you know? You could grill that right in the husk.
Mm-hmm. And then you get rid of any kind of burn.
You know, and then
we
soak
the husks in salt water in a
bucket.
But
I'd want a little char on my corn kernel.
Well, if you do the husk and char it, you're going to get a little bit.
In fact, it burns on the outside, right. So you're infusing it with all the smoke.
So that could be good. And then onions, I really think that you should slice them across into rounds.
Yes, agreed.
Thicker rounds, it will work better if you're grilling than to try to do a slice of onion on there. You want to have something that's whole
surface.
And complete.
Do you keep the root end intact so it holds it together?
Not necessarily.
No, and if you're worried about that, you can take
make
a wooden
sure I understand.
Skewer.
Can you just, sorry, Chris. Can you just explain that one more time? With the onions, how are you cutting them?
You're cutting them across, so you're getting rounds.
And so.
And you do it a little thicker. Because
how thick? That's what I'm.
I would say probably
like
about
a half inch?
Maybe even three quarters, something.
Really?
Yeah.
That's. Oh, yeah. I am doing
because
them
once,
too thin.
Once that cooks.
They shrink.
They shrink.
Yeah, they are going to shrink
and,
down.
But you're going to have that wonderful juiciness of the onion still. You know, it's not going to be
softness
this,
inside.
This little black thing that you don't know what it is.
So what about
was that the fennel or was it the onion? We don't know.
So we coat our zucchini in mayonnaise. Like, does that help it not? I think the mayonnaise just sticks better than olive oil. But it's an old
no.
An
I mean,
old
it's an old trick, but it, no. I mean, again, you can't use
it's
too
so
much.
Scrumptious. Like
I could see why.
It's almost like when you do an elote.
It's the aioli.
I like to pour cream on my
before you grill them
and wrap and bake and hold it together.
Nice healthy vegetable.
What if you do? Just don't overdo it, right? Don't over put mayonnaise. Don't over put oil, right? Put just the don't
other
use
thing
a
is
lot.
That's going to contribute to the burn.
Yeah.
Cooking with good light is important. You know, we try to cook after work sometimes when it's dark out, and you know, you're looking at a black Weber. You know, it's outside. You can't see as closely what you're doing. It's not until you take it off the grill and you carry it inside, you're like, oof, maybe that went a little too long.
Yeah, you need a light.
Well, it's like eggplant too. You know, it's in season. Yeah. Same thing. You want
I
to
love
cut,
grilling
cut a large round.
And that's the other thing I don't like.
So you have the whole piece of eggplant.
Horizontally.
Yeah, and when people
no,
do
across. Across the eggplant.
And that's
when
what I'm
people are not horizontally, not end to end. You want to go across the.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And when people do it too thin and it grills, it almost turns into a piece of leather.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Right? You want to make
it looks
nice
like
and
the bottom
so
of a shoe.
So it's soft on the inside and cooked.
Yeah, you'll
and
have
yet
that
crispy on charred on the outside.
Because you could do like a charred eggplant salad with charred red onions and all that stuff. You know,
so
and you
what are you putting in that?
Sometimes I make it like with sesame tahini in there, you know, so you have that nice sort of Middle Eastern kind of flavor.
Do you have to do anything with the
eggplant? Or you could do it with feta cheese. You grill it. Okay. Grill it and chop
but
it.
But no soaking it or getting it.
No.
Grill it
no.
first.
Especially this time of the year. A lot of our eggplant is not bitter at all.
So, Carol Peck, you grill it first and then you chop it.
And then you chop it.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. See, and I always say when you make if you're doing a charcoal fire, like a charcoal grill, and you get that, it always seems to me it's at that perfect temperature when you're done grilling. When I'm doing it at home, I always have stuff to put on it at that point that I'm going to use another day, like tomorrow. So vegetables are a good example. I'll grill a bunch of vegetables after I've grilled dinner, let my dinner rest a little bit off the grill, and then I'll grill a bunch of vegetables. I'll throw them on a pan, let them sit, and then after dinner's all done, I've done the dishes, then I'll go back to those grilled vegetables, chop them up, make like a salad with tahini or whatever you want to do, just a little olive oil and balsamic, and then you can eat that the next day on top of a salad.
Even cold.
Or heat it up with chicken
cold.
Or
that's
whatever.
That's nice about it. It's a wonderful cold. Right?
We've been doing vegetables.
I'm starving.
Right? Use that.
This show makes me hungry.
So cooking aside, I like serving stuff. So we have a big wooden board, and we grill everything. We put all the ingredients we carry in, and we eat like family style.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's wonderful.
You know, off this wooden board. It's so fun to get.
And if you use big pieces of zucchini, right, if you cut large pieces, that effect on the board
looks awesome,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
You have long strips of zucchini, long strips of eggplant.
If you have sausages or chicken you put in.
Can you give me your take on what kind of, if you have a gas grill, this is not relevant, but if you're someone who uses charcoal, what do you prefer? What kind of charcoal? Just a traditional?
Chunks. Yeah, no, I like the big chunk.
Also, they have the wood one, you know.
The hardwood.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the hardwood.
You like that the best?
I do like that the best, for sure. But
I will say, though, sitting outside on the stoop in Hartford, I can smell the briquettes wafting down the street. And there's something very nostalgic about that.
Oh, and the lighter fluid, right? Yeah, the 70s.
Yeah. Puts me in a good mood. I love it.
The lighter fluid, that smell of lighter fluid.
Yeah,
exactly.
It does. The wood chunks, but there's something about smelling the Kingsford that's nostalgic. I love it.
Now, I have a grill that does both. That's my favorite summer grill. I bought the Weber one that is the gas assist. So you just throw your charcoal on, you turn the gas on, you burn your charcoal for a couple minutes, you turn the gas off, and you have a charcoal
and
fire.
It's lit.
We use the chimney.
Do you like it the best of any grill you've had?
The chimney?
Yeah, I love it because you don't have to do the chimney.
The chimney's fun.
Wow. And
it
you with the dirt,
spark.
You got to touch everything.
On the boat.
Not on the boat. But we use a little gas one.
Who remembers the hibachi, though? Do you remember hibachi?
Yeah, for sure.
I want one.
It still exists.
I had one for a while.
So, Carol, at home, what kind of grill? Do you have a gas, charcoal, or any grill at home?
Me at home? Yeah. No, I don't cook at home.
You don't?
Not too much.
Do you go out?
I don't blame you.
Do you go out?
Yeah, I mean, I work 6 days a week, it seems.
Do you bring food home with you from the restaurant, right?
I do, but I don't eat breakfast in the morning. I'm not a breakfast person.
These are things that people don't know about.
This is an industry thing.
So what do you do? So you skip breakfast, and then you go straight is for lunch.
I go into the restaurant for lunch and I start picking.
Yeah. Okay.
That's lunch.
I do the picking a little bit. And then at 3:30 we eat.
Family meal.
Yeah, then we have a meal. So
Do you plan ahead, or you just say this is what comes up from today's ingredients?
I have people like from Ecuador working for me a lot.
Ooh.
So we always get excellent. They have to eat lunch. One time I gave them sandwiches and they didn't talk to me for like a month. They're like, this is not lunch.
Wow.
So we always have amazing, like, caldos. They're kind of soups. You know, they'll do them with eggs in them. And it's, like, great food. I love our lunches. They like to do fried rice a lot, too, but that sort of thing.
So we always
have a good lunch around 3:30.
Isn't this interesting about the different cultures? It's insulting to give a sandwich to Ecuadorians.
Absolutely.
How do you know?
A lot of my support staff are Muslim from the Middle East, and so that's what our family meals are like.
Yeah. What? Yours are
Moroccan,
Middle Eastern,
Yemen.
Because they want to make
their own food. Yeah, because they want to make their own food because a lot of times they're not interested in our food. Like sandwiches. They're like, huh?
Yeah, no, sandwiches don't go over at
what
all.
What is that?
Yeah,
no. It's an American thing,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. But we have to have a meal. I mean, you know, they can't
It's just... interesting because really, say, Middle Eastern flatbread is essentially a sandwich. You know, it has meat
on it. Yeah, but you
it.
Eat it with the dish. You pick up things with
so
the
last
dish.
Night,
that's like a fork and knife.
Yeah, last night we had grilled chicken. And the grilled chicken, we had toasted pita, and then we had rice with saffron. You know, they make
delicious.
This beautiful rice.
Any raisins in there?
No, he just did saffron and onions, and then he made a little sauce out of some leftover tomatoes that we had, and then you rip your pita, and then you grab a little chicken, put it on there. Yeah, you're making a little sandwich.
That's it.
You're right. You know, it is a sandwich.
It's your eating utensil, basically.
Exactly.
So
all right.
It's your sandwich.
Here's what I want to say. We love the local. By the way, if you have something you think we should know about here on the Food Schmooze, let us know. We would love to know about it. And we ask you, as you listen, to support our local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party every week and to find our curated food, wine, cocktail, restaurant, hot topics, short, fun streaming video lessons, and recipes we feature. We're always online talking with you at foodschmooze.org. We'll be right back. have one more mouthwatering bite of the Fuchsmooze coming up. Here's something great to know about. Sign up for the app called NPR One. Just download it from the iPhone App Store or your Android device. And once you do, you can set WNPR as your local station. Couldn't be easier. Download the free app NPR One and start listening. Let's party on. More Fuchsmooze. This is the Fuchsmooze Party, offering you the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, and the Hamptons. The senior producer is Robin Doyen Aiken. And to hear the show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3, Saturdays at noon. Podcasts, meaning the delivery of this show anytime you want it. And our curated recommendations are always online at fuchsmooze.org. Talk with us on Facebook, too. Carol Peck is with us, our special guest from Good News Cafe in Woodbury, Connecticut. Great, great discussion. I'm so hungry. I want to go out and grill, grill, grill. I want to turn, though, to Anthony DeSerio, our chief cocktail contributor, who has made this amazing summer cocktail. And this is online right now at foodschmooze.org. Wait until you hear this. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, so when I think summer, I definitely think tequila. So margaritas are happening. My favorite tequila cocktail is the Paloma with the grapefruit juice and some soda. So I put the two together. I'm going to call this Alex's fault.
My fault.
I like. Is that the name of the cocktail?
That's the name of the cocktail.
This
is Alex's fault because instead of the grapefruit juice, we have equal parts of 100% silver agave tequila, and then we did another part of lime juice. The recipe is online. To top it off, to get that Paloma aspect, Alex introduced us to the Pamplemousse, that great grapefruit liqueur that you introduced us to before the cocktail show. And I just was turned on by it. I said, you know, I need to reuse this in another cocktail. So this way we combine the margarita and the Paloma together.
Nice.
So we have the Pamplemousse, the fresh lime juice, 100% silver agave tequila.
It's fantastic.
Built it on the rocks and topped it off with Fever Tree elderflower tonic water.
Yes. So Fever Tree, which makes the most beautiful tonic water, as Anthony says, is now making this elderflower tonic water.
Elderflower tonic. It's
absolutely
goes with everything.
It goes with delicious.
Gins.
You can get it in many liquor stores and some markets.
I need a bottle.
Okay. So very, very gorgeous.
So cheers to Alex. Hey, Alex's fault.
Alex,
thank you.
I like Alex's fault.
I'm like the innocent one over here.
It's like, I didn't do it. No, take credit for this.
Yeah, exactly.
Can all of you give me a lesson on doing beef tenderloin on the grill? When somebody else does it and serves it to me, I'm in heaven. But I myself am a little bit nervous about doing this. So what's the easiest, most delicious way to do this?
Well, are you going to make steaks or are you going to do the whole piece?
I'm going to do the whole
piece.
Okay, so. And then cut it afterward.
Yeah, you want to make sure that you got your end tips off too, so you don't have, you know, so it's all one even, pretty much even size. Yeah. So you take off the end tips and you also take off on the head of it. There's a little part that hangs down further. I'd cut that off. And then I always try to do a rub on mine. You know, you can do like a coffee.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say coffee rub. Yep.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
I love her.
I do. So you do that rub and you marinate your meat in that. I would do it overnight. You really want that. You know, you can use cumin in there and coriander seed and fennel seed and the coffee. It's delicious together.
Okay, so your favorite rub, whatever sounds good. The ones you're describing sound terrific.
Right.
And you rub that all over the meat with any oil too, or just the rub itself?
I like to do the dry rub on that.
Dry rub.
Okay.
And then do you coat it, and then wrap it in
foil,
plastic wrap or anything, or just?
Just in a pan, cover it with plastic.
Oh, cover the pan.
Right.
And then
right.
into the fridge overnight.
Then
you want to take it out 20 minutes before you're going to grill so it comes to room temperature.
Yeah, even a little more than that.
Half an hour.
Half an hour would be good. And then you want to make sure that your grill isn't overly hot.
Yeah, because you have to cook it all the way through.
Yeah.
And if it's too hot, you'll burn it before.
So if it's a gas grill, let's do it both ways. If it's a gas grill, do we want it off the flame and to slightly to the side, or do we want it right?
You want it on the flame, but you want a medium flame.
Okay.
You don't want a super high flame.
I always try to teach my young line cooks when they're there, those little knobs on the front of your grill and your stove.
They have a meeting.
They don't have to be up all the way all the time.
They always want to turn it all the way up, the grill and the burners, and you can go down a little and go to medium or even medium low is good.
So our secret is using one of the thermometers that you can keep in during cooking, and then you can go online and get the exact temperature of which to take it off, so sure. I don't know, 120 or whatever, and then it continues cooking. But this way, it's scientific.
That's the way I do it.
Well, what you do too is you're going to sort of sear your meat off, and then if you have a lid on your grill,
what do you mean about searing your meat off?
Well, you're going to take and turn it once you've got a nice
brown it a little
brown
bit.
On it. You're going to turn it
and
to
do
the other
all
side,
the way around.
All the way around. Okay.
So it's nice and
grilled. In doing that, how do I know how much the inside has cooked in that process? Do I assume much?
We have the hands. We can tell if it's how soft it is.
Mm-hmm.
But a thermometer will work perfectly.
Okay.
Okay. And you should cook a filet. For me, you should stop it like at 120.
Okay. And do you want the outside as you're browning it to be very dark brown? But do you want it a little
black?
Well,
your rub is going to give you some color already. You have coffee and so forth in there. But you want it to be a nice, deep, blackish brown, but not like really black.
No.
And then if you have a cover on your grill, after you've browned it, you want to close the cover.
And you want it to stay on the flame?
Yeah, that's going to cook the interior as well.
Okay, and then you just peek to see if it gets to 120, and then you take it off.
Yeah, and you might want to turn it, you look at it and see how it's doing.
And let it rest.
Yeah. I was just going to ask.
Let it rest for a day.
I was just going to ask
half
about
hour. A day, but a long a time. Yes, not 5 minutes.
A half hour?
And then you make sure you let it rest on something that maybe has a little incline so the blood can...
Yeah, juices collect.
Can go down, and that's it, or even just the jus right on the meat.
Because we save those
fabulous.
Juices.
Yeah. I cut into it to see
that's,
how it's
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah. Not while it's cooking.
Well, why not?
Yeah.
Why can't I do that?
Why can't? Because your juices are going to start running out. You don't want.
And what will happen?
You're going to dry it.
You're going to dry it.
Will
out.
It dry out?
Yeah, especially filet. There's no fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a piece of meat, even like a steak or. A porterhouse, all that. They've got marbling and they've got fat in them normally.
How about after it comes off the grill and do you want to let it rest at least a half an hour?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So can I cut into it right away when I take it off the grill to make absolutely certain? Or I just trust the thermometer, 120?
Trust the thermometer.
What you're hearing from me is nervousness about carryover cooking, where it's off the heat. But the thing, especially, this happens with fish especially, but with meat too, it keeps cooking itself.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking to myself, I've taken it off at 120 and I'm letting it rest for half an hour. To what degree is it? And I want to cut into it because I'm about to serve this to a number of people. And if it's not the right thing.
It's going to come up maybe 5 degrees or
so.
It's going to be. It's going to be. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice and,
and
rare.
There's so many thermometers you can buy now that are high tech.
If you want it well done, you go up to 135 or something.
What if you want it medium because you're trying to please everybody's taste?
Then take it off about 125.
125.
Yeah,
okay.
Something like that.
If you're going to overcook that, then overcook it all. Like you overcook all the vegetables and then you start using an English accent. Be purposeful.
Uh-oh.
Or you can do a Vietnamese sandwich, or you can pull the meat.
I always say, even if you overcook
your
carnitas. Into shreds, tacos.
The key is to be ready to change the plan at any minute, right? So if you overcook it, exactly like Carol said, it's not the end of the world. It's still edible, and it's still probably pretty good. So instead of slicing it and serving it with vegetables, do like she said. Say we're going to have these bun me sandwiches, and I grilled it this way because it's for the sandwich. You never have to fess up to
that's
doing
it.
Something wrong.
It's funny. All this.
So you want to have backup rolls.
Have
some backup rolls or have some backup au jus to kind of moisten it back up again or something like that.
Well, this is I remember, Alex, that you did a piece online, I think, about for us about how No, and you talked about it on the show, too, how sorry you were that you had spent so much time at a dinner you were hosting apologizing.
I ruined the dinner. You realized that you were ruining it. Everyone was having such a good time. No one would have noticed, but I noticed. And then, you know, I was upset with Matt for overcooking it, you know, and I made it uncomfortable for, you know, for all of us. And I made sure that the meat ruined the dinner. And it's such a mistake. Just go with it. No one cares. No one really honestly cares. They want to be with you. They want to be having a fun time. And, you know, the meat's arbitrary.
They can talk about you in the car afterwards.
Yeah. and then you're on their mind all the way home.
But it's not like your house isn't a restaurant. They weren't paying to be there. Exactly. I mean, they're happy to be there. Sure. So
I think his point is don't sweat it, right?
Yeah.
Don't sweat it.
The lamb chops we did the other night, we were concerned that we had overcooked it. We followed exact temp, you know, proper cooking.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they were absolutely perfectly cooked.
I saw the picture online.
Yeah, they were
gorgeous.
Perfect. You know, I don't care anymore. The older I get, the less I worry about this stuff.
You just want to have people over.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a little bit.
No, maybe not that either.
That's like I said, I don't cook at home, basically. In France, I cook, though. When I'm over there, I cook.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I have a kitchen over there that's pretty magnificent. And I get fish and things that you don't find here, you know, like halibut and those turbo, which is a fish you don't get here.
Yeah.
So I see that and I can't help myself.
You're inspired by the ingredients.
Totally.
You know, it's true. I once, when I was on that tour, leading the tour in Italy, and this was another time, and we went to Chioggia, which is way out, and the fish market is so stunning, and we just led people through it to show them what it was like. And I was thinking to myself, I need to come back here and rent an apartment with a kitchen for a week and do nothing. Don't leave this apartment. Just go over here and buy these things. What are these? You know, this looks so fabulous.
Well, they have all different kinds of squid, too. Snails. It isn't just like little squid. You know,
barnacles.
You have cornet. You have the large, thick ones. I mean, it's amazing.
You must have so much fun. It's all fresh and all local.
And
if you watch the locals, they're all gravitating towards the super fresh stuff, too. So you just sort of, you follow them along and they, you know.
They have fresh sardines, anchovies. I mean, you know, it's just.
A fresh sardine.
So how do we get that sense? I mean.
It's coming.
Why is it just that we feel that, you know, when we go there?
We get that sense of need to cook?
Yeah. I mean, in a special way. You know, I mean,
you're on vacation.
But you get that here at a farmer's market.
Yes.
I feel that way at a farmer's market. Yeah. I see beautiful vegetables, but unfortunately, it's just, you know, you can't cook everything you see. And you could try.
but you go to the farmer's market and he's got these lovely turnips that are just, you know, new baby turnips in the summer and that kind of thing. They're so fabulous that you want to cook.
Think?
It's coming here. I mean, I'm not discounting the United States by any means. Like, butchers are coming back.
Craft butchers.
And all this thing is happening. So it's exciting to see.
I read an article in, I forget, I think it was one of the edibles, either from Cape Cod or Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. They were talking about a man on the Cape who is famous all around the Northeast for his turnips.
Mm-hmm.
And they were describing these turnips. And I thought, I can't believe that I want to get in my car
and get a turnip
and drive all the way to Cape Cod to buy this guy's turnips and cook these things that turn out to be like candy and have the most incredible flavor that ever, you know, went on and on and on.
It reminds me of being like a hobbit or something, like in Middle Earth. Like, hi, a turnip.
Well, another vegetable that's getting popular is kohlrabi.
Yeah.
I love it.
Kohlrabi is fabulous. A lot of farms, and it's in season now. You know,
how do you cook it? What do you do with it?
Well, I grew up with it as a kid, and it was like one of those weird things. But my mother used to make it like a gratin in a sort of cream sauce, and it was delicious. I always loved it. But we eat it raw a lot now.
I do slaws.
We do it in salads and slaws, and you know, you do it on a mandolin and that, and cut it into fine
like
julienne.
Celery root,
it's really good. So, but you know, then you can also stir fry it in pieces. You know, it's delicious.
And it must grow well around here because you see it. A lot of farms are picking it up and growing it.
That's it.
That's it. Might be the new and kale.
Could be the new kale.
Oh, no.
Kale.
Yay. The and leaves are edible on it, too.
Oh, see?
Yes,
can you fry them like a chip?
Try our cold Robin salad.
Why not?
Yeah, we're ready for something new, too, aren't we? Because kale's got to be almost done
please.
Now.
Yeah,
so let's go to something new.
Let's go to hot dogs.
You know, I have a hard time getting kale sometimes from my farms.
You know, the best.
There was a time they would give it to you. Like, please come and take the kale I planted because nobody wants it. Now I have to be like, can I get 5 pounds?
Yeah, that's a lot.
You want that much?
It's great for a cheese board, though, if you want to put all the cheeses on something, you know, for
the kale.
Plate it. Yeah, the kale.
And that's what kale used to be used for.
Yeah, no one ate it. It was decorative.
And a lot of people that are doing juicing are juicing kale and drinking it. Yeah.
The best first kale salad I had dried cherries in it and nuts and I think some cheese. It was really just terrific. And then I had it about 4 more times, and I realized about the 4th time that I was really in it for the dried cherries and the nuts and
the kale.
And so I just thought, I think I'm over kale. I was over kale quite some time ago. I'm ready for something else, people. Okay, fun. Carol Peck of Good News Cafe in Woodbury, Connecticut, one of the most talented chefs I know. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always an honor to have you here. And thank you, my food buddies, Alex Province, Chris Prosperi, and Anthony DiSerio, senior producer Robin Doyen Aiken. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3, Saturdays at noon, weekdays. Listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. Join the conversation with us. We're always up for a good time online at foodschmooze.org. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. This is the place to enjoy the richness of life. Sharing our local and national discoveries with you makes me want to get up in the morning. The gang and I hope you'll come back soon and often.